This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, hello again, everybody, at TFMR. Hey, today is FOMC day. The Fed lines for the July FOMC will be coming out later on this afternoon. Now, as I record this, however, it is a week before FOMC day. It's actually Wednesday, July 24th. As you know, my annual tradition of my summer sabbatical is taking place this week. And so we are pre-recording some things. And I thought, well, here's a fun pre-recorded conversation to have. I want to get David Brady back. You may recall, I visited with David last month, and we had some technical difficulties with that podcast. And so we thought, well, let's just try again. And what better time to do it? We can look ahead. We can plan ahead. We can discuss trading strategies, all that kind of stuff. So here on Wednesday, July 24th, we're recording for Wednesday, July 31st. Keep that in mind as we talk about things. And we welcome back our good buddy, David Brady. He is one of the founders of GlobalProTraders.com, traders with an S.com. You can find him on Twitter at GlobalProTrader. And follow him there because he's full of great information there. Great follow on Twitter. And this is our chance to get caught up again. So, David, thank you again for spending some time.
No, thank you, Craig. Always appreciate these interviews.
Let's just dive in, my friend. Like I said, for everybody listening, today, as we release this, is FOMC day at 2 o'clock Eastern. You're going to get the Fed lines. Let me just recap for everybody what I expect here 1 week in advance, and it's not dissimilar to what I expected back in June, that even if the Fed cuts what everybody expects, 25 basis points, the bond market's going to perceive that as not enough. It's going to keep them behind the curve. It's going to keep the yield curve inverted, and the bond market's going to rally. Now, it may only rally back to the levels that it got back in late June, which got the two-year down to 170 and the 10-year well below 2, I think down to 195, 197. But again, another bond market rally should put some extra starch in gold again as well. Now, leading up to that over the next week, we now have option expiration behind us. We've got the contract, the August contract going off the board. All that pressure should be behind us. And it's going to be very interesting now this afternoon to see what happens next. But that as context, David, as we now, you and I speak here on the 24th looking ahead, what do you think the next week has in store for us? And what do you think is then coming once we get the FOMC behind us this afternoon?
Well, let me start by saying, Craig, that I agree with your view on bonds. I think that yields are going to go lower. But in the short term, you can see that they're ticking higher right now. And I focus on TLT, which had a recent peak in the 134s, fell, and now bounced back to 132.50. And now it looks like it's going down again towards my target of 128. At the same time, you have gold, which means higher yields in the short term.
Yeah.
At the same time, you've got gold. It just set a negatively divergent higher high at 14.54, and it's come off, and it's dithering in the 14 teens and 14.20s. It's actually tested 14.30 six times in a row since Friday, and failed to get above there. We could see gold fall to 1400 or potentially even 1385 ahead of the FOMC. And you know, part of the reason for that is while yields are going up, you can see the Dixie. I've been saying for a few weeks now that Dixie's heading to new highs.
In dollar index.
Yes, the dollar index.
Don't know what you're talking about. Know.
Yeah, the dollar index, otherwise known as the Dixie, heading up to the 98. It's a new high. But, you know, I expect that to be the peak. I know there are some major analysts out there expected to go soaring higher, and it may do that. But I'm expecting it actually going the opposite direction thereafter. But ahead of the FOMC, you have gold coming off, you have the Dixie rising, you have yields rising, and silver is doing its own thing. It's its own animal right now, but it looks bullish. That's pre-FOMC. Now, post-FOMC, I, like you, expect 25 basis points. I think Williams floated the idea of 50 basis points last week. and they quickly backpedaled from it because stocks did little or nothing. They went up a tad, but nothing major. But metals and miners took off. So they backpedaled from that. So that was a balloon being floated, and it didn't work. So I think, and the backpedaling suggests that they're going to go with 25. But at the same time, I mean, Jim Rickards came out with this, and you know, I expect he'll be right that they'll end QT early. But as I've tweeted, that's purely cosmetic. I mean, QT is like $30 billion a month.
Right.
Treasury ran down their cash balances over the past 2 months while waiting for the debt ceiling debate to be resolved. And they need to issue $200 billion in new debt, additional new debt, over the next 2 months. Well, $200 billion drain in liquidity, dollar liquidity, relative to $60 billion less of QT. I mean, it's obvious that it's actually going to provide a hindrance, not a benefit, to stocks in reality. So when you might get a pop initially post the FOMC on 25 basis points, an end to QT, which is purely cosmetic, and then once it sinks in and people realize, wait, hold on a second, this is a disappointment, then you get a pop and drop. Now, I say this because gold could go up to a, you know, we're working off the overbought condition, the extreme bullish condition in a gold, and by the way, the data still matters. Every time there's a breakout in something, somebody says, oh, the data doesn't matter anymore. We had the same thing in 2018 when gold went in the opposite direction, and it was all extremely bearish, which is bullish, counterintuitively. Well, now everything is overbought and extreme bullish, and everybody says the data doesn't matter. Of course it matters. We've had breakouts before. Now that it's over bullish and it's coming off that over bullish level and that extreme overbought level, it provides room for the gold to go up to a second negatively divergent higher high above 1454. Now, I say that because 1485 is a level I quoted back in late 2018 when both you and I were anticipating a move above 1400 in 2019. But 1485 is the 50% fib of the move down from 1923 to 1045 in December of 2015. That's going to be big resistance. And by the way, it coincides pretty closely with 10,000 won relative to gold. And 50%, you know, it's an arbitrary number. But 1045 was 50% of the move up from 250 in 2001 to the peak of 1923 in 2011. So yeah. It's happened before.
And you can look you can look at the weekly chart, too. There's a lot of chart resistance at 1980, 1985, too. I mean, it's not just the 50%. So I'm with you.
Yeah. And if you know, if you want to look at the weekly RSI right now, we've had a negatively divergent high on that as well, and that weekly RSI was one of the highest ever. So I expect that gold is going to pop post the FOMC, Dixie peaks and falls, and bond yields peak and fall, much to how you opened this discussion. But I expect a pop and drop in gold, because what could happen thereafter is, now let's include stocks, the S&P finally peaks here at, you know, 3,000 to 3,050, maybe 3,100, and down we go again. And then we could get a scenario like 2008, a deflationary crash in stocks, yields dump because money flows out of equities into bonds, but gold, rather than go up, goes down in the short term, much like it did from March 2008 to October 2008, before it exploded higher. We are overdue a nice pullback in a decent sized pullback in gold, and you know, been calling for it on the way up, and we've had short term pullbacks as we're in right now. But the bigger they are, the harder they fall, and we could see a drop to 1335. 1300 or maybe even 1270. And here's the thing. If we hit, and we'll get into this discussion later on with regard to the trading strategy, even if we hit 1270 on the downside, we're still in an uptrend. The major bottom on the weekly chart is 1267. As long as we hold above there, we're still in an uptrend, and then we can explode higher to, you know, I believe this recent rally is just the preview for the rally that's to follow. And I could be wrong, and it could have been an ABC rally, and we're going down to lower lows, as some well-known analysts have been talking about for years.
Yeah.
But given that QE and MMT and the whole nine yards are coming down the pipe, I'll go with the bullish scenario that we're more likely to go above 2,000 on the next tournament.
All that stuff kind of ignores reality. We want to talk about trading strategies are valuable, and that was the purpose of our discussion last month, and I want to get into that again today. But I also, you know, want people to always remember, excuse me. I also want people to always remember that it's not just a dot on a screen. The trading level and technical levels are important, and the banks are monitoring them too. And they will set up resistance at those levels to kind of make it almost self-fulfilling. But there's a real world thing that's driving the desire for gold in all its forms. I mean, it's not just, hey, look, it broke out above 1360. Yippee, I got to get on board, you know, for wave 3X, you know, subchapter B. It's this recognition that these central bankers are charlatans, and that they have spun these tales, particularly over the last 5 or 6 years of normalization, and they got all this shit under control and everything's great and there's no problem and we're the magicians and we're the saviors of the world. They're being revealed now in the economic slowdown that none of that is true. And so there's a demand for real money again, for hard assets that will outweigh, you know, some technical analyst saying that gold needs to go to 750 to wash out some whatever, knock yourself out. You can, you know, that makes a market, I suppose. But I'm with you. I mean, the stuff still matters. The COT still matters. The bank's desire to rig price lower still matters. I think it'll be interesting, though, over the next week, David, to see how much open interest comes out of COMEX gold ahead of the August contract going off the board. You know, I'm sure you monitor this as I do. You know, open interest got really close to all-time highs just a few days ago. But now as we're heading into the expiration, you know, positions don't get fully rolled. It'll be interesting to see how the COT changes over the next couple of weeks. Maybe we can get open interest back down to 575 or something like that due to the expiration. That might give us some wiggle room for another one of those punches upward as you're talking about.
Exactly.
I just look at that, there are just a lot of other moving parts, obviously, that you're watching as well.
Yeah, and I just want to reinforce what you just said. Look, 90 to 95% of trading these days is electronic, and I mean non-retail, and driven by algos. The best example of computerized trading I can find is every time Trump tweeted about positive talks with the Chinese with regard to trade tensions, markets went up. Even though we were in the cry wolf scenario for the 20th or 30th time, markets went up. Why? Because computers can't detect bullshit. Right. And until they do, they just follow what the program tells you. They look for certain words and trade positive, up you go.
Right. It's like this afternoon. The Fed lines will come out at 2 o'clock, and before any human being can even get through the first sentence, right? Price will go one way or the other. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. That's my point, exactly. The algos just trigger off of headlines, technicals, Fibonacci levels, etc. They're programmed that way, and they've got some very smart people putting these numbers together. So the point being that the banks and their expensive analysts are watching all of the same indicators that we're watching. But let me say this. The data does not become irrelevant with regard to a breakout one way or the other. I've heard many major analysts talk about how, you know, the technicals no longer matter, sentiment no longer matters, positioning no longer matters. We've broken out. All that stuff doesn't matter anymore. Like we've never had a breakout before,
right?
Really. I referenced 2018, and people like Fred Hickey knows this too, because we were looking at the same data and it was extremely bullish, but gold kept falling. Well, now we've got the opposite happening. All of the data is extremely bearish, but gold keeps going up. Well, ultimately, it does matter. And if you go back and look at the rally from, using gold as an example, from 2001 to 2011, or the drop from 2011 to 2015, you had a trend up in the first period, you had a trend down in the second period. Guess what? There were peaks and troughs all along the way in each of those trends. And you had peaks in the bank short position at the peaks in price in both trends, and you had minimal shorts or banks actually being long at the troughs. And the same can be said for sentiment as well. So one does not negate the other. Because we're going, we've broken out, and we're now in a strong uptrend, the data still matters. It's just there are interim peaks and troughs within that.
Right.
And to address the and we can go through the strategy I use here in a second, but you made a very good point. This is the key to my process. There are a lot of purists out there that either cite Elliott Wave Theory, technical analysis, sentiment, DeMarcus, intermarket analysis, fundamentals, you name it. But if you use those in isolation, such as you mentioned, you're focused on the technicals and the Elliott Waves and so forth, and you completely ignore the fundamentals. You can cite 750 as a possibility in gold, and it may even get there. We don't know. But with QE and then MMT coming down the pipe, even if it does take a dip down there, there's only one destination for gold and silver under those circumstances, and that's fundamental data that we're basing it on. My point at the end of the day is you need to use multiple tools, even if it means more work and effort, because here's the bottom line. If all of those tools are saying the same thing, and they all have merit because you've got purists, you've got different groups who swear by each one of them, so they obviously all have some degree of merit. What if you use all of them and they all tell you the same thing, much as they did in gold in the latter half of 2015, that gold was going about to take off? Well, you have a great degree of confidence in your trade or your investment, and that's the essence of my approach. I don't subscribe to one or the other. I do value the work of purists in those various areas, but I take their work and I mix it to, what the technical analyst said here on the left, and then the Elliott Wave guy said on the right, and I put the two together, and if they're saying the same thing, that's a strong argument. And then I tack on sentiment, and then I throw in fundamentals, then I throw in intermarket analysis, and then trend following. And then when all of that says more or less the same thing, then you can feel a degree of confidence that it's going to go your way. Put it differently. By focusing on one discipline alone, no matter how good you are at it, how is that, from a common sense perspective, how is that superior to using not only that tool, but the whole range of other tools on top of that, all together in combination with one another?
Exactly right.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
So let's just talk about then, that's a great summation of strategy. And again, at the end of the day, a bull market is not straight up. A bear market's not straight down. They're primarily defined as just a series of higher highs and higher lows, or lower highs and lower lows. That's
well
really
said.
All it is. And if you recognize, if you get the trend right, then you can anticipate those higher highs and higher lows. And when things are coming in and the cot's coming in and all that kind of stuff, and you think, okay, there's going to be a low here soon. This is another opportunity to get long, or, when things are going up, this is a chance to maybe take some off the table. One of those things you mentioned earlier, and I want to make sure people know what this means, is when you talk about a negatively divergent higher high. And to me, that means a failing of momentum, which is inevitable because, it's a finite amount of people that are going to get interested and excited in buying futures contracts. And so eventually momentum is going to slow. Now, I think there's real value in that, obviously. But at the same time, how do you measure that? Well, one, explain what that is. But then I'm going to also take an additional question onto it. How do you measure the value of a negatively divergent high when, like, for example, in this case, I mean, the relative strength index in gold back in earlier this month got like to 85, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. Almost by definition, ain't no way you're going to get, what, it's going to go to 90 next time, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you're almost, it's almost self-fulfilling that you're going to have a lower, you know, one of these negatively divergent highs. So how do you kind of, what's the art of kind of mentally managing all that to get, a true signal one way or the other? I mean, that's, I guess, what I'm driving at.
Yeah, put a different way. What's to say we don't get another negatively divergent high, or the negative divergence is broken and it just keeps going up? To explain what a negative divergence is, it's, as you pointed out, you also have positive divergences, but let's use the negative divergence to illustrate the point, is that you have price hits a high and RSI hits an extreme high. And then price comes back off, then goes up to a higher high, but the RSI, the relative strength index, does not hit a higher high. It's a lower high. So momentum does not support the higher high in price. That's a negative divergence and typically signals trouble ahead for price. Now, to answer your question, well, how do you know if, you know, it isn't going to be broken and then we just continue higher? You know, we keep getting higher highs. Well, that's why I don't look at any indicator in isolation.
Right.
If you're looking at the RSI alone and it says negative divergence, upsell, you're running into trouble. But if you get a negative divergence on sentiments, say, and there's a tool out there called the DSI, it's very good for this. Or, you know that you've got a scenario with regard to the fundamentals, say the FOMC, that looks somewhat realistic and you expect it to be negative for markets, and you compare that with the negative divergence you're seeing in the RSI and the negative divergence you're seeing in sentiment, and then you've got a big resistance level dead ahead, be it a technical Fibonacci or both, and then, interpret market analysis, you know, the Dixie looks like it's going to head up to a new peak.
Yep.
When you put all of those things together and not look at the RSI in isolation, you can feel a high degree of confidence that this is going to be a peak and there's going to be a drop. Now, that, again, going back to our trend discussion, short-term versus long-term, when the RSI is negatively divergent, that may signal a short-term drop in prices. But it doesn't mean the trend's over. It just means a pullback. And then it can go higher again. So I don't extrapolate major tops or major bottoms with positive divergences, or, in the former case, negative divergence. But they can be very useful in providing short-term direction.
How about things like the gold-silver ratio, David? How do you work that into your, I guess, the mental picture that you form?
Well, that's a great question. It's something I've been focusing on a lot recently, is the gold-silver ratio, because we went up to a peak in the 90s. Many were saying it could go to 100, 110, citing the industrial usage of silver, and we're going into recession, which I thought was complete nonsense. Because if anything, the industrial usage of silver actually reduces its supply. Thereby, the investable amount of silver relative to gold is actually smaller than the amount that's available on Earth. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Well, and then this reversion to the mean theory, where the higher it goes, the more likely it's going to go down than go up. And then lo and behold, that's what happened. And to this point, the gold-silver ratio hit the way above 90s, historical high, and now it's come off substantially. I think, I have the data here in front of me, but it's in the 88, 86 area, and in a very short space of time, and it's extreme, beyond extreme oversold. On its RSI is now, I think, 24 on the daily. The MACD is, on its way to Australia, digging a hole in the ground. And so I do believe we're going to get a dead cat bounce, which means we're going to get a bounce in the GSR, but it's going to fail. And then we're going to go lower. I do believe it's peak long term. Now, going back to your question, how does that factor in? Well, it tells me silver is going to outperform gold going forward.
Right.
Silver, my personal holdings since I started buying metals back in the second half of 2015 are 75%, 80% silver and 25%, 20% gold. And it's primarily based on the GSR. Because there's about 10 to 1, 8 to 1 of silver available on Earth relative to gold, based on estimations. And then given that silver is more widely used in industrial for industrial purposes, you can knock that down to 4 to 5 to 1, investable silver relative to gold. And with that in mind, and the long-term averages of 30 to 1, 15 to 1, depending on how far you go back, and in a bull market, just one last point, silver tends to overshoot relative to gold. And given the bull market that's coming, the explosive rally that's coming in metals, given QE and MMT and perhaps a global monetary reset and a crash in the dollar, silver could dramatically overshoot gold to where we get even to 1 to 1. But I'll be conservative and say 10 to 1. Well, from 93 GSR to maybe 10 to 15 to 1, that's a dramatic outperformance in silver relative to gold. So if gold goes up to 3,000 or 5,000, I put a grid on this in an article I wrote for Sprott Money about 3 weeks ago. You could get dramatic gains in silver by comparison. So if you're talking, say, 3,000, I mean, silver goes to 300. What are we right now? 16s, 17s, 16s? Yeah,
20 times.
I mean, do the math. And if it goes to gold goes to 5,000, you're talking 500 silver if it's 10 to 1. I mean, the numbers are astronomical. So for me, it's obvious silver is going to outperform gold going forward. And we have historical precedent for this, as you know better than I do. Back in the 70s, gold went up 24x. Silver went up 36x. I expect that to be blown out this time around. Mm-hmm. And this is followed by the data. I mean, follow the smart money, I've been saying forever. China and Russia have been loading up in gold for years. Well, JP Morgan has also been loading up, but hasn't been loading up in gold. It's been loading up in silver. And a bank, as you know, never does anything unless it's for a profit. They know what's coming. And they've been using it to do cover trades on the downside. But they've also, they're well prepared when the COMEX actually breaks and ends and the explosive rally in metals takes off. They are well positioned for truly ridiculous gains on the upside when that happens.
You mean you'd like to have 140 million ounces yourself?
Oh, I'd like to have 140,000 ounces myself.
All right. As we wrap up, Dave, let's just have a little fun.
Yes.
And I'll go first so that you don't feel like I don't want you to think I'm putting you on the spot.
Sure.
As I mentioned in the introduction, it's July 24th. It's Wednesday. It's actually about noon Central, 1 Eastern. So we've got 1 week and about 45 minutes before those Fed lines, as I call them, are released. Let's just have some fun. And I mean, again, I'm not going to hold you to this. Nobody should hold us to it. What Yogi Berra said, the hard thing about predicting the future is hard, or making predictions is that it's hard because you're talking about the future or something like that.
Yeah, only hold us to it if we're right.
Right. And then we're gonna tell everybody about how brilliant we are.
Yes.
But again, I expect 25 basis points out of the Fed this afternoon, and I expect the initial reaction may be negative, kind of sell, buy the rumor, sell the news kind of thing. And then once Powell starts talking and the gravity of it all kicks in and the bond market then begins to rally, I think that next leg up begins. It will kind of run out of gas. As I've mentioned all year long, I thought at some point before the end of the year, we'd get into that 1480 to 1520 area. I think 1520 is just such an extraordinarily important level. Mm-hmm. That we're going to make our first punch up there in the weeks to come. And I'm with you on silver. I'm one of those people. I do think the GSR could get to 100, if anything, because the banks have it so much under their thumb that you might get $1,600 gold and $16 silver.
Right.
Before things really explode. But anyway, that's what I think. I think we get kind of an early August rally that then kind of, and then we got some overboughtedness excess that we got to work off. I mean, it's just how it works before maybe rallying again in the fall. So that's what I'm expecting today. How about you?
I'm in agreement with regard to 25 basis points. I think Rickard says it right. They'll end QT, even though it's only cosmetic. And to your point, Powell come out and start talking dovish. after the fact as well. But I think it'll be a pop and a drop because once the news sinks in after the initial rally, don't trust the first move. People will say, well, hold on a second. 25 basis points, we had 50 to 75 over the course of the year priced in. Okay, you met our expectations, but it's not enough. Our valuations are excessive in stocks. We wanted more. QT ending early, so what? $60 billion off the table in terms of draining liquidity. You're going to drain $200 billion when you issue that new debt. I think that we could see a pop and drop. Whether it gets to 1485 or it spikes up to the 1500s, we get a pop and drop thereafter. And it could take a day or two. You can end the week higher. And then the following week, people absorb the news and it goes south. That would be my two cents on it. And with regard to the resistance levels, going through the process again, you've got big Fibonacci levels acting as resistance here. You've got technical resistance in terms of the indicators, the RSI and the MACDs being extreme overbought. You've got extreme bullish sentiment. We don't need to get into how short the banks are going to be if we get up there. And you've got the Dixie will be at new highs, in my opinion. And you will have fundamentally the market's likely to be disappointed because the market is so bulled up to the nines, be it in stocks or in metals, that it's primed for disappointment, regardless of what the Fed says. I was going through the scenarios recently, and you know, please jump in here. If the Fed does nothing, say doesn't, you know, the market dumps. If they pass and they say well, no rate cut, the market dumps. If they do 25, even with QT, I think you might get an initial positive response. If it was 25 only, disappointment. 25 with QT and early, initial positive response, then dump. 50 basis points, everybody might be rah-rah initially. But then there's the other side of that coin, which is, wait, is the Fed panicking? Yeah. I mean, why are they doing this? To be honest, the market is so bulled up to the nines. I have difficulty finding a positive scenario beyond the very short term after the FOMC.
For the stock market or the gold market?
Both.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I think to kind of summarize, I think we're in the same. I'm hoping against hope we don't get 50. Because I think the bond market would sell off dramatically. I mean, if anything, it's because what the Fed should do if they're trying to accomplish what they want to accomplish, which is somehow get the yield curve positive sloping and hold off a recession, all that kind of stuff. But they won't do it. I mean, they should cut 75 if they're going to do that. I think the bond market would realize that if they did 50, they'd say, oh, hey, okay, let's take some profits for a while and see how the shorts, you know, what happens. And we may go sideways for 6 months in gold. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen. But I think if I were to summarize our positions as we wrap up and let everybody kind of get ready for the events this afternoon, I think we both see the potential at least for maybe a dip to buy heading into the event to look for maybe an opportunity to lock in some gains not too long thereafter, whether it's 2 days or 2 weeks as we get up to that kind of pretty staunch resistance zone up near 1480. But then recognizing that it's a bull market, we then begin to look again for a dip to buy at some point in the future. Does that sound about right?
Perfect. I'm going to just add one thing is with regard to the Fed, watch what they do, not what they say.
Correct.
At the end of the day, if they were truly adhering to their dual mandate, and Real Investment Advisor did a great article on this today, they shouldn't be cutting at all. They should be raising rate.
If that's what
record low employment, economy's doing wonderful. I mean, this is all pure nonsense is my point. And that's why they're cutting rates. You know, Luke Roman's talking about the Fed funds versus the IOER, the interest rate on reserves, a very valid point. But we're heading into recession. All the numbers are just nonsense that we're being told. So watch what the Fed is doing, not what they're saying. And I only bring this up because, you know, we're talking about 25 basis points, 50 basis points. If they were telling the truth and they were adhering to their dual mandate, they should be standing pat right. are actually raising rates.
Right.
So so everybody's clear on that.
It's a very popular sentiment, and I think what then gets lost by those that express it is that that in 2005 or 1995 or 1985 that might be the case, but not in 2019, not after what the central bankers have done to the system over the last 10 years. I mean, that's just
it's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah,
it's a Ponzi scheme. You can't. You need constant increasing inflows right. into a market or into a portfolio, in a Ponzi portfolio, in order for it to keep going up. As we learned with regard to QT, that the S&P is basically flat for the past 2 years. If you don't have increasing flows into the system, increasing liquidity into the system, the Ponzi scheme collapses.
Yep.
Stable or falling.
Yep. Which and is why they can't do what those people say. Well, if they're honest with themselves, they'd hike rates. Yeah, but they can't. This is a new world we're in. This is not 1997.
We're at 225, 250 in the Fed funds.
Right.
I mean, that's the lowest amount of rate increases in history. We were doing 25 basis points a quarter, but the economy's booming.
Right.
I mean, it's preposterous.
Right.
So anyway, I just want to go on that little rant at the end. It's more about
that.
What they're expected to do, rather than what they say, what they should do based on their mandate.
Spot on, my friend. And again, globalprotraders.com is your site. Global Pro Trader on Twitter. And also, I always look forward every Friday to your post that is written at Sprott Money. I encourage everybody to check that out as well. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
No, I truly appreciate these conversations. I benefit as much from this as you may, Craig. This has been a wonderful opportunity to get up to speed on what's happening ahead of the FOMC and with regard to the trading approaches, because I highly recommend people be a little more open-minded with regard to other tools out there, because it'll only benefit your trading strategy and optimize your results at the end of the day.
Yep, I hear you. All right, my friend, we're going to have to get back together soon and see where we are, where this whole road took us. But for now, good luck this afternoon. I wish you the best. I'm going to be with my feet up drinking a cocktail with an umbrella in it, trying not to care about it. But I know you'll be wired in, so good luck.
Yeah, I'd rather swap places with you, much as I'd like to see gold pop.
I'd like
to be on a beach drinking a nice cocktail. Anyway, thanks so much again, Craig. Appreciate it.
You bet, David. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Good luck this afternoon, and we'll visit again soon.